the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, have you been watching Netflix lately? One of the more popular documentaries out there is How to Live to 100. And we're talking about the Blue Zones. Joining me from Blue Zones, Vice President, is Nick Buettner. And Nick, I wonder if you can share with our listeners, sort of encapsulated in the last episode, four key things that distinguish these areas of the world where people are living beyond 100 and staying healthy. And I want to begin with one, which is movement. These are people that, you know, we think of in the West, we go to gyms, 24-hour fitness. These people exercise naturally, whether it's walking, whether it's tending their gardens, whether it's just, you know, tending sheep, whatever it is, but it's more of a natural movement that they stay in for most of their life. And in fact, in the documentary, you got people that are 100 years old that look fit.
Yeah. No, I think, Jim, that's a really good point. I mean, the funny thing is if you look at here in America, you know, we tend to think diet and that individual discipline is that secret to good health. But the problem is it only works for about 6% of the population can actually stick with the diet. I can tell you firsthand, I've lost that same 20 pounds about 30 times. But in the Blue Zone communities, they move naturally. The design of their communities were to walk to school. It was biking to their friend's house. I met this guy in one of the communities. He was 80 years old, bicycled 20 miles every day to visit his mother. I met this woman in Costa Rica who mowed her lawn with a machete. But I think more important, it was the natural design. In Okinawa, you're getting up and down off of the ground. You don't have these big chairs and barca loungers. So you're moving naturally in your knees and that low impact exercise. And you also do our gardening and things like that, that again, good low impact exercise that also keeps your flexibility as you age. And I think it's just the design of their communities and the way that just allowed that exercise to happen organically versus that conscious thing they had to think about every day.
You know, that's a thing that really surprised me in Okinawa. When you see them sitting on the floor, they get up. I mean, most people, when they start getting in their 70s and 80s, have difficulty getting out of chairs. These people just spring up off the floor. It was absolutely amazing to watch. Another thing that struck me, and I saw this in the first episode in Okinawa, it was this community. You know, at one time, and you and I were talking about this before we went on the air, that Norman Rockwell family dinner together. Today, families are keeping different schedules. They don't have that community come together as you see in so many of these Blue Zones. Let's talk about that because that was a second important characteristic of all the Blue Zones.
Yeah. And I think it actually flows through a lot of different areas. You know, when you look at two things, somewhat really interesting research out there right now around our social health. The Surgeon General just came out and basically said it's at pandemic levels. It's epidemic. Because 30 years ago, the average American had three best friends. It's now down to a friend and a half. And if you can tell me where to get that half a friend, I'd appreciate it because I haven't been able to figure that out yet. But if you have less than three friends, you're defined as lonely. And the impact that that has on your health is about the same as smoking 20 cigarettes a day.
Wow.
Isolation kills us. So in the Blue Zone communities, they were engaged communities that were supporting each other in their health and in their well-being. They're supporting each other's as whether or not they're family, as you age, you're surrounded by love all the way through your life, but also they support each other as friends and neighbors. In Okinawa, they created these things called moais. They're committed social relationships that start at a very young age. And I met people that were that were part of these groups called moais for 97 years. They got together every night as friends. But now if you think about that, now I have a support network if I need a little bit of help. When I'm having that bad day, whether it's I lost my job or I need support, I need a ride somewhere, I need help raising my kids. You have this broader personal board of directors that support it. And I think that's one of the things that that's happening right now here in America, is we're losing that sense of community, that sense of friendship, that support, because we're defining our friends by Facebook friends. We're defining our friends by Instagram friends versus those analog friends that when you're having a bad day, they're really dependable and you're there for them. And I think that's what's really important around that. And that's also helps us come together as that broader community. The last thing I want to say, and sorry for droning on really long about this, because I think it's a really good point, is the other thing is around eating, and that Norman Rockwell family. Right now, we're eating our food by numbers as we're driving through drive-thrus or in our car racing to drop our kids off or whatever else. We're eating our foods in front of TVs. And it creates that mindless eating where you're not sitting down as a family, where you're not making food around celebratory, you know, with friends and family, and getting aligned versus just doing it on the quick. And that, I believe, is one of the things that's impacting our caloric intake in this country that I think has boomed in the last 20 years at just crazy rates.
That was something that really hit me in the documentary. You think of the modern family today. I can't go anywhere. I don't care if it's a shopping mall, if it's a sporting event. People are on their phones. They have iWatches. They have their iPads. They're watching TV. You didn't see that in these zones. I mean, they're sitting together in the family. Everything is more on a personal basis versus being on devices.
Yeah. Well, and what I'll say is in Loma Linda, they did, it's in the United States. They have access to that same technology. The question that I always ask is technology is a tool, right? That at the end of the day, how we use it, it's not demonizing the technology. It's demonizing how are we using it? And what are those things that are using it that and how we use it that impact our well-being? There's a lot of research out there right now around our mental health and the impact social media has on our mental health. There's research out there around social media and the impact that it has, like I mentioned before, around the time, how much time we're spending with our loved ones and with our friends and with our family versus being in that media and how that piece is going down and the problem with that. But I do, again, I have always looked at technology as a tool that can be good. It can add value to our lives. It can keep us connected with our families in the right way. It can be used as a productivity tool that will allow us to be able to spend more time with our family and things like that if it's used right. The question I have is how it's being designed and how it's being pushed on us by the social media companies are probably not helping us design our lives in ways that are promoting well-being. They're not setting up an environment around well-being.
I want to move on next to diet, which was also very important. From what I saw, most of it was plant-based. Let's discuss that.
Sure. In the Blue Zone communities, they did have mostly a plant-based diet. When you look at the foods that they ate, about 90% plant-based, very high in carbs. Now, a lot of people might come back to me and say, well, I've heard carbs are bad, but you also have to remember there are good carbs and there are bad carbs. A lollipop is a carb, as well as a tomato. You know, all carbs are not the same. When you looked at the proteins and the fiber, it's beans, where it's a huge source of it for them. We believe that I think beans were one of those things that we need to eat more now. Were they vegans or vegetarians? No, they ate meat, but it was only about four times a month and in portion sizes around the size of a deck of cards. They had fish, two, three times a week. It was more the limiting of those things and using them more as a condiment versus that thing that takes up two thirds of your plate. And they had a lower caloric intake, like I mentioned before, than we tend to have here in America.
Yeah, that was the thing that I think it was in Okinawa. They have a saying where you walk away from the table, you're never full.
Yeah, it's Harahachi Bu. It means I'm only going to eat till I'm 80% full. It's how do I limit my caloric intake? And not only the mindfulness of doing that when you're sitting at the table is important, but I also believe that they have techniques set up to reinforce it, like pre-plating your food versus eating buffet style, because then you have that food on your plate and you eat that food, and it's easier to control your caloric intake than if it's in front of you and you start eating mindlessly.
And folks, I'd highly recommend, there's a cookbook. It's called Blue Zone's Kitchen, Recipes on How to Live to 100. I just ordered it myself and plan on cooking many of them. So as you look at some of these, what was the fourth component that you thought was common among all these communities?
Well, I think that there's a couple things. It's pro-movement. It is pro-diet, pro-healthy diet, pro-plant based. But also with that, it's caloric intake and it's how you're doing it with the family, a little bit of wine. And then it's how we come together with our community, with our family, with our friends, and even with our faith. But I think the other one that rises really important is having a sense of purpose. It's how we look at our lives. Number one, having a sense of purpose. In the Blue Zone communities, they not only had a sense of purpose, but they could articulate it. Whether they're 20 or 100, they could articulate their sense of purpose, and people can articulate their sense of purpose, live on average 7.5 years longer. And the other thing with the right outlook on life is stress. Stress is tied to inflammation. Inflammation is linked to most age-related diseases. Now, in the Blue Zone communities, the hotspots, they had these simple techniques to help reduce stress, to keep that inflammation going. And there are simple techniques that allow them to do that. So the way that I break them down, there's 9 commonalities in all, but the 4 buckets are pro-movement, pro-outlook, how they look at their outlook, purpose, stress, their diet, and then social, how they come together as a community to support each other's well-being.
You know, the other thing that, as you look at all of this, you had these 4 common characteristics in all these communities around different parts of the globe. You guys have started a movement where you have taken these elements that make or give longevity to these communities and tried to replicate them here in the U.S. Let's talk about that. And I think one of the first communities was in Minnesota. And talk about the results.
Yeah, so it's wonderful to look at Okinawa. Watch the documentary. It's great for you to be able to look into your life and around the work and read Dan's books and cookbooks and stuff like that around those Blue Zones, because it is a very good story around how do we look at our lives. But the big aha moment for me in all my travels was I never met one person at age 50 who said, I want to go on a diet so I make it to 100. I never met one person at age 50 who said, I want to start exercising, make it to 100. Longevity was never something that they pursued. Rather, it ensued because of their environment. Now, here in America, if you look 50 years ago, our ancestors had 1/5 of the rate of obesity, 1/7 of the rate of diabetes, and according to some studies, 1/10 the rate of dementia. And it wasn't because they were smarter. It was because our environment has changed. You can't go to a grocery store or a hardware store without having to go through a gauntlet of unhealthy foods. You know, what the foods that are being developed are processed and quick and processed and easy. But there's some of the things that are worse for us and how they design it. And when you look at our communities, as parents, you're afraid to allow your kids to walk and bike and to get that natural movement. And even if you want to go to the grocery store, you don't have to anymore. I can order all my food while sitting on a couch. We have less movement. We have a sense of our society and how we're coming together around neighbors. Like I said earlier, the Surgeon General report around our social and how it's at pandemic levels is a huge thing, you know, that has changed from where it was 50 years ago. So what we at Blue Zones now are doing is taking those Power 9. It's not us at Blue Zones. What we've done is these are community-led. We're doing in 80 communities across the country to set up an environment where that healthy choice is easier. And we do it in three different ways. We hire a local team. This is community led, where you're leveraging the partnerships and existing strengths in a community to overcome the challenge. But then you work with individuals around how are we helping people understand their gifts, their mission, their values, and be able to live it out, their purpose. How do we break down isolation, create more supportive social networks, and help them design their homes? We have one team member or team members in the community that are working in that space. Increase volunteering. The second space is where do you spend your time? You spend, 3,000 hours a year at your work and only 30 minutes with your doctor. What has a bigger impact on your life? Your kids spend 900 hours in schools, your restaurants, your grocery stores, your faith-based partners. We worked with hundreds of experts to design interventions that work in work sites, restaurants, grocery stores, and those other places. And we have team members that will work with those organizations to try to reach a tipping point of nudges in those places that make that healthy choice easier. And then lastly, it's around policy. It's around how are our municipal leaders having the political will to design communities where streets are made not only for cars, but for people to be able to move and use active transportation, be able to move. Where our parks are not only designed, but they're activated for healthy places where we can come together. Housing in our communities. You can look at then food systems. What's the access to healthy foods? Is it affordable? And how do we create better food skills? How are we passing policies at a municipality level to support that, but do it in a way that aligns with the culture? And lastly, what are those things that drive addiction in communities like tobacco and alcohol? What are those policies? We have team members from those communities that then will support it. So what you're trying to do is set up an environment, so no matter how you interact in that community, that healthier choice is just a little bit easier. And it's done by creating blueprints from the local community that are developed, but we bring Gallup in to measure it so that we're really looking at the well-being index and the North Star community indicators like diabetes and heart disease or obesity, as well as it in the organization. Now, we've done this starting in 2008. We've worked with small communities like Albert Lea. We've worked with mid-sized communities like the Beach Cities in L.A., we've worked with large communities like Fort Worth, Texas, or communities like Salinas that have kind of those different makeups, or Immokalee in Florida. And what we've seen is outcomes, not only movement in the WBI. In one of our communities, we saw a 55% reduction in childhood obesity. So what does that mean for that community 20 years down the road if those kids are starting with a happier, healthier baseline? We're seeing in Albert Lea, they saw a 49% reduction in medical claims from the city workers. We're seeing tourism going up. We're seeing the Gallup Well-Being Index in Fort Worth, Texas, where you have not only different races, but different economic statuses in those communities. What we're seeing is the well-being index went from 180th in the nation to 31st in 4 years, because you're designing an environment where that healthy choice is easier. So that's kind of the goal of what we do. We have a formula that partners with the community, that activates the community, so that what you're trying to do is set up environments in that community where healthier choices are easier. And these are community led. So the community not only helps define what are those community indicators that are important to them, but at the same time, they're also involved in the strategies. So you're leveraging the strengths and you're breaking down the silos that exist in communities so that everybody is working together around a common goal that reaches a tipping point of well-being over a number of years, so that now all of a sudden the message in those communities and how we're having conversations, well-being is prioritized. And that's what you're seeing in 2008 was the first year we did in Albert Lea, and 15 years later, that work just continues to grow because you've reached that tipping point and now more people are getting involved in it.
I want to talk about something you and I were talking before we went on the air, and that's a little bit of a controversy, which is red wine. I think in about three or four of the communities, they'd have a glass of red wine. You know, my doctor told me many, many years ago, you know, it's good to have a glass of red wine at night. And then you hear that wine's not good for you. So what's your take on that?
You know, I think that there's a lot of conversation around the value of wine and the value of alcohol right now. And the research is mixed, is what I'll tell you. What if you look at the Blue Zone communities, what you ended up seeing is that four or five of them had a little bit of wine every day. It was like a glass or two. They didn't save up and have 14 on the weekend. It wasn't binge drinking. It was a couple glasses of wine, one or two glasses of wine. And what they ended up seeing is a few things. Is number one, it is in some ways, it's the value of the wine. Like Caninal wine from Sardinia is very high in those flavonoids, very high in antioxidants, which was part of that benefit. The other thing with the wine, it was how it worked with the diet, what they ate to create, to lower that glycemic index on the individuals. We saw values in that. And we also saw values in using that wine as a thing to come together as communities, as neighbors, and how they celebrate, and how they came together around food, you know, how they came together around happy hour, quote unquote, to be able to spend time with your neighbors and those relationships. So for me, that's where I see the value in it. Now, where alcohol is a slippery slope, that if you look at addiction, if you look at overconsumption of it, no, it's not good. It's not good for your brain. It's not good for your heart. It's not good for your liver. It's not good for a lot of different parts. But that what we did see is that a little bit of consumption does have value in a couple of different ways.
And isn't it, there's a different mix. I mean, I don't know if I was told like French wines and Italian wines, they don't have some of the chemicals and things that we use in making wine here. What about that?
Yeah. And you know, I'm not a wine expert. I got to be honest with you. I can tell you that I agree with you, Jim, that some of the additives, like we were talking about earlier around the processed foods and other additives that we're putting in there to be able to store the wine longer and all that other stuff are probably not best for us. The wine that I talked about in Sardinia is homemade wine. I mean, these people were making the wines from grapes that they grew on the side of their house, and they'd share them with friends. It was really naturally met. But how they built it, how they did that wine was really focused on leaving the rind of the grape leaf in there, which created this kind of bitterness that is where those flavonoids, where those antioxidants were in that wine. And that was kind of, again, that benefit, like I mentioned before, around not only the antioxidants, but how it partnered with other foods to really impact chemically your glycemic index.
So, Nick, what would you tell people that would like to live this kind of lifestyle? But let's say you live in a big city like Los Angeles or New York City where it's crowded and you're not in a small town. What are some of the things that you could do? I would think community and diet and maybe exercise, but also purpose. How do you put all that together in a big city?
Well, we talked about those nine commonalities earlier. And the first thing that I would recommend, and I don't care if you live in a big city or a small city, it doesn't matter. This is for everyone. What I would tell you is that as you look at the Power Nine, those nine commonalities, it is not a matter of trying to do everything. If you're trying to change every aspect of your life, it's a recipe for disaster. You're not going to be able to do it. But if you can figure out some good baseline, you know, I know we have some tools on the bluezone.com, we can help baseline. Or if there's things that you want to work on as an individual, I want to exercise more, I want to eat healthier, I want to have purpose, I want to be more social. That what I tell people is if you're going to do that by making discipline the key to it, you're going to fail. But if you can do that by how are you setting up your environment? Like if I want to eat healthier, what's on your counter at home? Is it bags of chips or is it a bowl of fruit? So when you need that little bit of pick-me-up energy, what's handy and what's in my eyesight? When I open up my refrigerator, what's in front of you? Is it that cake or is it vegetables? You know, so how are you designing that environment? How are you finding friends when you look at food? So that I have friends that when I'm going out to eat, they're exchanging healthy menus and healthy recipes and we're challenging each other. So you're getting that social support around the behaviors, whether it's exercise or purpose or whatever. How do we find like-minded friends that are supporting us, that's creating accountability mechanism? And then we have to think through that stress. Here in America, how are we letting some of that stuff go? And how are we designing our priorities and our wants and our needs, especially financially, so that what we're doing is setting up environments where we can release some of that stress and focus on what's important. Focus on how are we setting up our lives so that we have better quality of life, so that we have lower compression of morbidity, that time between when you get sick and die, so that when we're looking at how do we spend more time with our family, better years of life. Because I think that's the biggest thing that I learned from the Blue Zones in my hotspot travel, is it wasn't just a quantity of life. It was a quality of life that we should all be striving for. And it starts with setting up our environment that supports it.
Well, listen, Nick, if our listeners would like to find out more about the benefits of the Blue Zone, the lifestyle, why don't you give out your website and the name of the book, by the way, your brother wrote, The Blue Zones, is an excellent, excellent read. Because when you read about these people, the common characteristics, it really strikes out how, you know, at one time, that's the way we used to live. And we've moved away from that. Tell them how they could find out more.
Yeah, there's three things that I always think about is the documentary. That Netflix documentary and how my brother Dan told that story was amazingly shot, amazingly put together. It's easy. Watch it. I think everybody would love it. BlueZones.com is our website. Lots of tools on there, measurement, recipes, Power 9, what are we doing, solutions, all of that stuff. And then the third piece is what you mentioned earlier. It's the books. And it's not just the Blue Zone book, which I think is very, very good. But he has, Dan's wrote a bestseller on happiness. But the other one that I really liked is we went to the Blue Zone communities and we asked the centenarians, what did you eat when you were kids? And they cooked us food. And from those food, Dan created a couple cookbooks, 30 minutes. And these recipes are amazing. And again, the value of it is that it's a tool that you can use to really be able to start changing well-being, not only for you, but your family. And it doesn't take a lot of time. There's recipes in there that are really easy and that food's been found locally. And what I like the best about it is it tastes good. Because I can tell you to eat Brussels sprouts, but if you don't like Brussels sprouts, you're never going to eat it. So how do you make healthy food taste good? And I think there was some good work done in those cookbooks to do that. So that's what I would say in terms of the tools that we offer that your listeners could take advantage of.
All right. Well, listen, Nick, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. Worthwhile, folks. If you get Netflix, How to Live to 100, highly recommend that you watch it. It is fascinating to see how living the way we used to is actually healthy for you. Thank you so much, Nick. All the best.
Thank you.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.